Blog Talk Radio.
Are you due for a relationship makeover? If you had the power to wave a magic wand, would you use it to improve your relationship? Well, there may be some hope. You're about to embark upon a journey. A journey that may prove to be vital in improving your relationship, whether it be with your spouse, significant other, children, co-worker, family, friends, or even yourself. A journey that if you simply open your mind to desiring a positive change in your relationship by listening to this show, it just might happen. You're about to take a journey into the Dr. Jesse Walker Show. Warning, the show can be contagious.
Hello and welcome to this edition of the Dr. Jesse Walker Show. I'm your host. I'm Dr. Jesse Walker. I'm going to be with you for the next 60 minutes. Thank you so very much for joining us this evening. We've got a great show planned for you. And I trust that you all have had certainly a great week. I'm certainly looking forward to tonight's broadcast. We're going to be on for the next 60 minutes. I just want you to know that I've got a book out there. It's called After the Passion. Now what? It's available at Amazon.com, or you can certainly go to my website, drjessewalker.com, and review it. You can pull it up as an e-book, or you can get it with, as a paperback. So I encourage you to do that, either one, and enjoy the book. I've received some reviews on it, and a number of people enjoy reading my book. All right, having said that, we're going to go right to the, we're going to bring in the co-host, Ms. Audrey Blake, from Atlanta, or where it is that she's traveling from. Ms. Blake, welcome to the show this evening, and I trust you're well.
Yes, Dr. Walker, thank you. I'm always honored to be on the show and excited about our subject matter. How are you today?
I'm doing just wonderful. I'm excited about the show equally just as you are and looking forward to getting it going on.
Yes. So would you like me to tell them just a little bit about myself?
Yes, I do. I was about to say that. Go ahead, Ms. Blake. Take as much time as you need.
Sure. Well, I am the author of the book Falling in Love with Me, the second edition, which is newly published by Tate Publishing Company. And if you'd like to receive an autographed copy of the book, person interested, they can go to my website and complete the Contact Us page. The company website is fosteringleaders.org. And we'll be glad to get you a copy, and we'll send you the billing and invoice information. The book is only $9.99. Also, I am the author of an e-book called Dying to Wake Up. It's a great novel about a young lady who is at the top of her game in life and longs for love and meets that love only to find out that she may be dying. And it's not a doom and gloom book, as I always share with individuals. It's full of romance, love, and suspense, and quite a few surprises along the way. That book is available right now on Amazon.com, and with the holiday season upon us, it's a great time to buy one for yourself and send one to someone else. It's only $4.99. The hard copy should be coming out in the summer, and, of course, it will be much more expensive, so you want to get in while the getting is good and be ahead of the game on knowing about this book before the buzz gets going. I'm also available for speaking engagements, workshops, and seminars. I'm a certified life coach that I help people accomplish their goals and make it happen, specializing in stress reduction. And those of you who are aspiring authors, I can coach the book out of you. And I also have the honor of being Dr. Walker's co-host for this show that's all about relationships. And that's it, Dr. Walker.
All right. Well, that is certainly, and it's an honor to have you on the show each and every week. you do a fantastic job, and I know the day will come when you will go on to bigger and better things, but for now, I'm certainly enjoying you over the air, and thank you so very much for that.
Yes, and I would like to just say briefly, I didn't give out the phone number for those of you who wanted to call our business line. You can call 770-866-2162. Again, at 770-866-2162, or go directly to our company website at fosteringleaders.org.
All right, we're going to get ready for tonight's topic. And I find it to be a very interesting one. We're going to get ready for tonight's story, that is. And as I said, I find it to be a very interesting story. And I think it'll serve well with the storyline in it. So let's see what we can do about that. Are you ready, Ms. Blake?
Yes, I am.
All right. Then we're going to get right to it. You know, sometimes I like to reiterate what we talked about last week. And it was a very interesting topic that we had last week. And I certainly did enjoy that as well. So those of you all that may have missed last week's show, please go in and check out the archives at drjessewalker.com and pull up last week's show for December, I think it was December 9th. Yes, it was. That show topic. And I'm sure that you'll find a benefit just by tuning in to that broadcast. All right, tonight we've got a very interesting topic, and this one is, you know, I'm going to start out with the question. Well, and the question is tonight's topic. Are people really the products of their environment? And this is only part one. Are people products of their environment? Next week we'll come to you just 2 days before Christmas. So I trust that everybody will be ready because Christmas is next Thursday, a week from this Thursday, and we'll be bringing the show live to you with a little Christmas flavor next week. Ms. Blake, let me just before I go to the story for this evening, let me ask you the question. Are people, in your opinion, are people really products of their environment?
Environment does play a significant role in an individual. However, so does hereditary and DNA.
Okay. I like that. I like that very much. I'm going to also respond to that question of are people really the products of their environment. I, too, agree with what you're saying. I think that DNA is a very important link because oftentimes we want to pick up some kind of characteristic that may have been coming from that gene, that parent or even a grandparent or a distant relative somewhere. There's a gene, I believe, that comes in there, and the child, whether they look the trait, you know, whether they look like that parent or relative, or they have behaviors that are very similar to that individual. Oftentimes, even if there's not a father in the home, I've heard so many mothers say that their sons, wow, this boy not only looks like his dad, he acts just like his father. And the father is not even around, and the boy has never even picked up anything on characteristics or behaviors that the father may have exemplified.
I do feel very strongly that the DNA and genetics plays a major role. I guess to give you a very brief example, you can have two children and both of them have inherited a very musical inclination, maybe that they can play certain things by what we call by ear or without learning a musical note. And what can make the difference between that child, one child being a great musician and another child never really playing much, has to do with the environment will push that child. You may have a home where it's nurtured, or maybe a school or a situation where that child has the opportunity to nurture that. And so he joins band and he learns like nothing. It just comes very easy for him, easily, because he has a genetic inheritance to do that, versus the other child may find it just as easy, but no one ever encouraged him, and so he may not pursue that. But at the end of the day, that child that becomes really great also found it kind of easy to do that because it was in their genetic makeup.
Right. That is so, that genetic makeup is so important. And, you know, sometimes even when people go out, and certainly I'm not trying to discourage people from becoming foster parents, but sometimes when people go out and they even do an adoption stages of life, when they adopt kids, they don't know that bloodline. They have no idea of how that kid, when they, even if they get them as babies, they don't know what
right.
that child is going to be like, and that's mystery or a surprise sometimes that they're shaken into, because you don't know that DNA, you don't know that bloodline and what the child is going to act like. And but I often want to think that environmentally, if you can kind of culture, nurture, you know, a child, then, I mean, there's a good likelihood that they may turn out right, but there's no guarantee. And certainly I'm not
right.
suggesting that or trying to infringe on the adoption process, not at all.
Right.
I mean, even kids from a dual family that are both the offspring of those parents, there's, you know, parents can be very good law-abiding citizens, but there's no guarantee that that child is going to turn out to be the same, right?
Correct, and you're right. And I guess I'm really glad that you brought that topic up, because parents who are adopting children, I think it's a wonderful thing, but do be aware that the genetics play a very, very strong role in a child's life. And again, you know, I've heard parents, and these are not parents that adopted kids. These are just parents that raised their own, and adopted children are their own, with all respect to that as well.
Right.
That raised their biological children, and they get frustrated because their kids are doing certain things. But if they sit down and look back at their past behavior, their kids are
right.
just replicas of themselves.
Uh-huh. Right.
And parents don't always like to admit that.
Right, and that's so important, and I'm glad that you said that, because now we're going to go right to the story tonight, and let's take a look here. Our characters in tonight's story are Zelma and Xavier. Zelma, spelled Z-E-L-M-A, and, of course, her son, Xavier. And so let's go ahead, and we're going to take a look now at the storyline. All right, Xavier is a 14-year-old student in middle school. Zelma, his mother, is having difficulty raising him along with two other children as a single mom. Now, his father abandoned the family when Xavier was only 6 years old. Xavier is the oldest of the three children, which are two younger girls. Their ages are 2 and 4. So she had them like 2, 4, and 6. Well, at that time, but now they're 10 and 12. The father abandoned them, actually, when they were only 2 and 4, and Xavier was 6. Now, Zelma and her children, you would think that that's the perfect way to have the kids, 2, 4, and 6 at that time. But Zelma and her children live in a disadvantaged socioeconomic community. In other words, they live in a very poor community. In fact, they live in the projects and are on government assistance. Zelma works as a clerk at a community store where she earns barely enough money to make ends meet, now despite being on government assistance. With all the challenges that Zelma and the kids face, Xavier, being the oldest, is getting into numerous problems in school as well as in the neighborhood. Now, Zelma is now at the end of her rope with him and does not have a clue as to what to do with him. She feels he will grow up to be like his father, who also grew up in a similar community. In the last 3 months of school, get this now, in the last 3 months of school, 90 days, Xavier has received 10 outdoor suspensions, and they're all ranging from cutting class, drugs, fighting, as well as being in unauthorized locations outside of the school during regular school hours. Now, his mother feels that there may be very little hope for him. This is what his own mother's thinking. There may be very little hope for him, and tends to blame most things on others and the environment that he is growing up in spite of the fact that she cannot afford to move out of the environment That's interesting, and that's key. She's blaming others, and she's blaming the environment, even though she can't move outside of the environment. Zelma tries to have him in church when she gets a chance to go, which is usually twice a month because of her economic situation, especially when it comes to gas and other unaffordable car expenses. She now throws her hands up, seeking some kind of mercy, some kind of grace, any kind of blessing that she can get, or simply a miracle for her son, as she cries her heart out because he just received an additional suspension because of smoking drugs in the bathroom at school. Now, the question that we also start out with tonight is there really any hope for Xavier and others that are just like him? Which, of course, brings us to tonight's topic. Are people really the products of their environment? And this, of course, is part one. Ms. Blake, we go back, and, you know, you and I both have given some thoughts on the environment and people being products. We talked about DNA. We talked about a number of things relative to that. You can be a product of your environment, you know, if you came from a hostile environment, but you don't have to continue with the mindset of that environment. Let me ask you, Ms. Blake, let me just start out here. Is there any hope for Xavier and others like him? And we all want, yes, we want to believe there is, but what do you really, I mean, let's keep it real. Is there really any hope for him?
Well, Dr. Walker, I was a licensed social worker in the state of South Carolina for several years. I just didn't renew my license at one point. But, yeah, there's always hope. You know, that's a given for me. I don't think people are hopeless. I'm also, you know, I'm opinionated, so I've never been a strong proponent of suspension. I've never understood what suspension really does, what good, unless that person is wielding a gun in the air and shooting at people. But the things that I'm seeing that he's done, you know, skipping class, some drugs, fighting, being in unauthorized locations, I really adamantly think that suspension, what good does that do? You know, so you put the problem outside of the environment, and so they can just foster and get into more trouble. I mean, you know, you're just cultivating the behavior by suspending. So, yeah, I think there is hope. There definitely is hope if she gets him with the right mentor and some intervention.
All right, let's stay with that just for a second. You say that when you suspend him, you're taking him outside of the problem necessarily. But what else can you do? I mean, should we enable the behavior by keeping him in the school? Is that what you're suggesting? And being a bad model for the other kids? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I think kids can think for themselves. We don't give kids enough credit. I'm sorry, but he's a high school student. Am I looking at that right?
He's 14.
Am I understanding
school,
that? 14. Okay.
No,
so
14
right
middle
at middle, the end of middle school. He must have stayed back a little bit, be 14.
Yeah, he probably stayed back a year. He's an eighth grader.
Okay. I think that the best thing to do, this is why we have to have programs that intervene.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, sometimes you've heard of alternative schools, alternative classrooms. Again, why send a child home? I mean, it's just a matter of time. Now you really want them to get into some trouble. You've heard the saying, an idle mind is the devil's workshop. So at least
right.
In school there was some type of structure. Now, there needs to be maybe a more strict program. You know, you've heard of these boot camps and things like that to provide that kind of structure that Xavier may need to get him on track. Because at the end of the day, and I've never been an educator, I know that you have an educational background. I've never been a true educator in the sense of working in the school system. I've taken programs to the school in public health. And at the end of the day, I see these kids that pretend to be rough and tough, but they just really need some love. They need more than just love. You got to get the attention, and you got to be strong enough to deal with them. But most of these kids need some attention. And so saying, you know, go home, don't come back to the school, well, then you're just really sending them into criminal behavior.
Well,
and
you know,
I mean that philosophy.
No, I know. And, you know, society. And you know, I agree with some of what you're saying to an extent. But even if there are no immediate programs, to put a student on punishment like Xavier at the school, like an indoor suspension. I mean, for drugs, I mean, it depends on the infraction. I mean, if you do it one time, remember, this is a kid that within the last 90 days has gotten 10 suspensions. You know, so it sounds like he has a chronic problem of doing some of the same things. And so, obviously, the system isn't working for him. And I agree with you to that extent when you talk about maybe programs like boot camp. So there needs to be something else that these kids can go to. But if the parents are not, like in Zelma's case, if she's not aware of other resources that are available, what is she to do, Ms. Blake?
Well, and I don't know how many listeners we have, school guidance counselors and social workers, but I've been on a roll with that for years. I feel that these professionals have a big role to play. Now, I know it's overwhelming because there's so many children that need this type of attention. But these type of professionals, such as your guidance counselors, you know, I expect my guidance counselor to do more than just tell me what classes I need to take. You know, they need to be aware of resources. They are programs in the community now. Unfortunately, a lot of them have been cut. There are churches. There are organizations. There are fraternities and sororities. I think that if you really want help for a child, then as that guidance counselor, I would pull, or that principal or assistant principal, I would pull that parent in the office and say, look, this is what's going on with your kid. Now, we are willing to help you help him, but, you know, you are the parent. And so, you know, I would provide that parent with some resources. Now, the problem becomes when there are no resources.
All the resources have been cut, like you're saying.
Exactly.
But,
exactly.
I mean, in Xavier's case here, we're talking, I mean, this is a serious matter. 10 suspensions in 90 days, and now he's gotten his 11th one, and he's only 14. I mean, he's crying out, obviously, for something.
Right.
But there's also a void that's missing that maybe he's crying out for. But, I mean, at some point, doesn't he have to take responsibility? And before you answer that, let's go to the phone lines. We're going to go to 954. You're listening live to the Dr. Jess Walker Show. We're going to go to 954-226. Who do we have on the air this evening?
Hi, Dr. Walker. This is Rose.
Rose, thank you for joining us this evening. Rose, did you have, I mean, help us make some sense out of this. I mean, I'm just looking at it. I'm going to keep it real. As an educator background, I mean, Xavier here, I mean, he's demonstrating some real bad behavior. And at 14, he's got to take some responsibility. And then the pressure and the stress he's putting on his mom, at some point, something has to change.
Boot camp. He needs to go to boot camp. That mom needs to get him in boot camp to try to save him, because at the rate at which he's going, I don't know, you know, where it's going to end up. Maybe no place good. I don't know. If that were my child, it's sad to say, but if it were my child and he's getting into so much problem at school, being suspended 11 times, smoking. I mean, obviously the mom is talking to him, but he's not listening. And I do understand that his father is missing and he's missing, you know, a male role in his life. And he's probably rebelling for something, you know, not having his father. But at some point, he needs to get it together. And maybe if he were to go to boot camp, maybe that might help him. Staying in the school or keeping him in class, I know Ms. Blake saying a suspension is not working for him. But a child like that, it would just disrupt the entire learning environment. And not only will he lose out on his learning, but the other students also. And he's also setting a bad example for those students if they kept him in the classroom, then the other students are going to feel like, hey, it's okay for me to do all of this because he's doing this and he's getting away with it. So the teachers or administrators have to put their foot down and have to cut it off so he won't get away with everything. And since there is no other program in the school besides a suspension, you know, I'm pretty sure they must have tried the indoor suspension already, and that's not working. So now it's the outdoors. So I totally agree that he needs to get out of the school environment to get help someplace else. And I strongly believe that a boot camp is the right place for him right now, because the next suggestion I would say is juvenile. You know, let him go and see how hard it is out there. Maybe that might wake him up and you know, to turn his life around.
You know, that's an interesting point. And I think that with the suspension, suspension being there, it's kind of a temporary thing. But you mentioned earlier, Ms. Blake, also about counselors. You know, I mean, when you're talking about middle school, let's say one middle school, I mean, and I have an educational background, but some middle schools can have as many as 1,200 students. And then you might have three counselors servicing that entire population. So now, depends on the location of the school and the environment, meaning the location, and you have there's a commonality of problems that are breaking out in that community at that school. And so now every child has seemingly some kind of issue. So imagine how overwhelmed these counselors are. Three counselors dealing with 1,200 kids. And every day there's fighting breaking out. There's all kind of massive problems going on. Then, you know, something, the system is not servicing them very well. So boot camp is an option, but then parents are not aware about that. Just like Rose said. You know, then what's going to happen? Go ahead.
Right. You make a great point. It's the same thing that in social services, social workers face when kids die in care, and the news broadcasts that like the social worker was negligent, but that social worker had hundreds of thousands of cases. But the thing about it is, you know, if I was Zelma, okay, that's the mom. You know, Zelma, every parent has got to fight for their own child. Now, I have, of course, been married and raised two African-American sons and feel very blessed that they are doing, you know, well. But if I was Zelma, well, somebody would hear me. You know, I would start with the counselor. I would go to the principal. I would go to the governor. I would be in President Obama's office if I had to, because I'm like, somebody is going to help my child. My child will not be lost. And the other thing is, I don't know about this school, but in-school suspension, and I'm not against in-school suspension, I'm against out-of-school suspension, short of the gun and violence. But, I mean, for the things that I'm reading here, none of this stuff seems that major to me, even drugs, believe it or not. You know, I know in Columbia, South Carolina, there's a school district that, and I have a very close friend, that he runs the in-school suspension for his school, and he does not play with those kids. Now, I don't know if he's breaking any laws, you know, but it works. Uh-huh. You know, those kids don't want to go to his in-school suspension class. And yet at the same time, these children love him. They form a bond with him, because by him getting all in their face and being hard on them, they know that somebody cares.
Right. And, you know, now here's probably where we will respectfully part, because, you know, as an educator for nearly 30 years, I can tell you I am in favor of outdoor suspension as long as they can be placed into, I mean, you know, maybe first two times, maybe out suspension at home, but there also needs to be some other resources available for the child, because, I mean, you got these many infractions, and drugs. The minute you're doing drugs or you're doing some, you're consistent with certain behaviors, you got to get out of that school. Like Rose said earlier, you have got to get that kid out of that school, because even an indoor suspension, you know, you got to feed the kid. So somewhere along the way, these other kids see them coming through the hallway. They may be in a line with several other students, but they're still there. So like Rose said, I have to agree with what she said. You know, other kids see that, Xavier got away with this. And all they did was put him in indoor suspension. Then you know what? It's not so bad. But if you send that kid home, at some point the parent, and I agree with what you said about the parent has got to fight for their children. You got to fight for them. So just like you said, you would be, if necessary, you'd be in President Obama's office or making that call. You don't stop until you find the resources that are out there that can deter your child's behavior. I fully agree with that. We're going to ask you to stand by just for a second. You're listening live to the Dr. Jesse Walker Show. 347-857-1769. We're going to go to phone lines once again. Ms. Blake, unless you want to respond right away, and then we'll go to phone lines.
No, I think it's good. I just think that there has to be resources to deal with the children. And I do agree. You don't want to send a message that it's okay, here's a slap on the wrist. But, you know, when I hear about out-of-school suspension, I'm not sure if there's any education that's occurring. Is this child is sitting home waiting to get in more trouble, or is this kid getting some kind of lesson study online or something? But anyway, we'll go to the phone line.
All right, we're going to go to the phone line in just a second. We're going to go to 917-399. We're going to ask you to stand by 917 just for a moment. I do want to say, if that child, at some point, the parent has also got to take some responsibility, you know, to fight for the child, yes, because the parent is the one, in my opinion here, that child, Xavier didn't just get out of control. Xavier got out of control somewhere in his pre-K stages. And then maybe what seemed to be acute at the time, his parents just let that go on and on and on. And I understand she's busy. You know, she's got three kids. The husband abandoned her with these three children. Now she's having to fend for all of them. She's not making enough money. And chances are she's not a formally educated person, which in some cases this may be making a difference as well. But somewhere along the way, she made a decision to have three children, or it happened anyway. It's after the fact now. It's happened. And so somewhere along the way, she saw certain behavior. This has not just happened in middle school. I can assure you, Xavier was acting up in elementary school, and somewhere along the way, she didn't do everything that she needed to do at that time. You talk about resources, church, and different things, boot camp. Somewhere in elementary school, if you don't catch, in my opinion here, and Rose, I'm going to ask you to comment on that just before we go to the next phone line. If you don't catch these children early, you're going to have a much greater difficult time on your hand trying to, you know, get them on the right path later in life. Someone once said, when they're babies, they're on your heart. When they are older, they're on your mind. And maybe it goes the other way around. Rose, let's hear from you.
Okay, that saying is, when they're young, they tangle your legs, your feet, but when they get older, they tangle your heart, you know. Because when they're young, they're babies, you can't go anywhere. You have to keep them. You have to be there with them, you know, so you can't walk around or go as you want. But when they're older and they're gone, you know, your heart is in trouble because they do things they ought not to, and you just keep worrying about them. Xavier, I agree with you, Dr. Walker, that Xavier didn't become who he is overnight. And, yes, I do blame the mom also. She has to take some responsibility because, as you said, obviously she ignored certain things that was going on, and she should have, you know, as parents, you have to know that you have to train that child from the child in your stomach, okay? You can't just feel like, oh, that is cute, you know, or, no, the child don't understand at 6 months or a year. The child don't understand. And you let them go. No. You know, when I had my first child, I was slapping her hands at 6 months if she touched what she ought not to touch. When my child, my first daughter, became three, she didn't have to get another whooping at all because she just knew what she needed to do. And she knew how to behave because I trained her. So parents have to train their children when they are young, you know, so that they'll know how to behave when they get older.
That's an interesting point. Rosa, let me ask you this briefly. You weren't afraid of child abuse at the age of three?
No, I was not. You know, I'm originally from Jamaica, and although I had my kids here in the United States, I didn't even think twice about that. If I had to whoop them, they were going to get whooping. And if they were going to think of calling, you know, on me, then they'll go where they placed you. But as long as you're with me, I'm going to take care. I'm going to train you because the cop's not going to train you for me. Okay, so I took care of that.
All right, interesting point.
Walker, I see this is going to be probably a two-part show, and I know we got to get to the phone lines. But I'm just bringing a different perspective. You all are educators, and I am been in social services. And the thing is, I'm looking at the fact that Xavier was skipping class, doing drugs, and fighting. And at the end of the day, I think someone needs to find out what's really going on. Does he have learning disabilities? Is he frustrated because he can't, you know, concentrate and focus? Is he hyper? Is he ADD? Is the drugs providing some type of soothing thing for him? I mean, we really got to get to, there are some underlying problems that I think the school and his mother is missing.
I agree with you. And I like the part of the social work part because, I mean, if the school system and the social work, and they do have social workers in the school system, if we can all be on, you know, as close as possible to being on the same page, I believe we can find the answers. And the answers are needed in these low socioeconomic communities. They are very much needed. And the answer, in my opinion, is not always the medication that they want to throw certain kids on. That is not always the answer. And then you mentioned something earlier, is he learning disabled? Sometimes people, when they don't understand certain behaviors or individuals, they want to label them as learning disabled. You know, and a lot of kids, they start to label that. And so someone once said, when you label someone, that determines now how they're to be treated. Now, I want to go back to Rose on something. And, Rose, you mentioned that you're originally from Jamaica. And that saying that you meant, they'll tangle your feet and then when they're young, and then it will tangle your heart when they're older. But over here, I've heard it, where when they're young, they're on your heart. But when they're older, they're on your mind. Because, you know, you love them so much when they're young, and you love them when they're older. But the things that they can get into when you're not able to see them, that's when they're on your mind. So we're probably on the same page with that, just different sayings that we've heard. Ms. Blake, have you heard any of those things?
I have not, but I definitely want to hear what our callers have to say because this is really a hot topic tonight.
Okay, here we go. We're going to go to 917-399. Thank you for your patience. You're on the Dr. Jesse Walker Show.
Hi, Dr. Walker. This is Angela. How you doing?
How you doing, Angela? Thank you for joining us this evening. Angela, help us make some sense out of this. Our topic tonight is, are people really a product of their environment?
Yes. Yes, they are. I live in New York City. I see it every day. Even with my own 20-year-old daughter that I had to deal with, she comes from a two-parent home. We work for a living. We try to do everything we can for her. I think we may have spoiled her and rotten her, where she just thinks we owe her the world. She doesn't have, she don't care about anything. She don't care about her parents. She don't, she smoke weed. She gets high. She want to do what she want to do. Haven't graduated from high school. And I'm using my daughter as an example because I see this every day. And we sit down, we talk to her, we have family talk. We talk about how other families don't have a dad involved in life and how their parents aren't working, how their parents are on drugs, and how this affects other kids. But then you look at the kids, some kids who are in shelters, who have the world against them, and they are straight-A students. And I'm like, what happened to my kid? You know, I thought that what my husband and I was doing right, we were going to raise productive kids and not feel as though, you know, we constantly battling with our 20-year-old about doing the right thing. And it's difficult out here, not just for a married couple, but for single parents. I see it everywhere. Kids are raising kids. Parents aren't being parents anymore because they either at work or they're working two jobs, and they can't be home supervising their children because the other parent isn't there. Extended family isn't around anymore where you could say, hey, mom, can such and such sit over for a couple hours where you know they're being supervised. And nowadays they're not being supervised by your immediate family. They're letting them do what they want to do. They're getting high with your kids, you know. So, I mean, basically the child is doing what it wants to do. The situation who you're talking about with the little boy, I don't think that boot camp is the best thing for him. I think it's his parents' fault that he's the way he is, and it starts from home. A lot of us have gotten lazy, allowed the TV to raise our kids. They're doing things they're seeing on TV. They're acting out and taking it to the school where young adults who never had kids have to deal with those kids, and then they try to label them. Because I'm going through the same thing with my 8-year-old. The first 3 weeks of school, she got suspended because she was on the floor rolling around and says grab one of the teacher's hands. And they said that the way she grabbed them, they took it as a threat. So, but the thing is, when my daughter got suspended for 3 days, she had to go sit in the library for at least half of that day. So she was still getting some type of education. But at the same time, at 8 years old, and she's being suspended.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, our society is going downhill. And like she, I think I heard Rose or who's the other guest that's on here with us? Something about Miss Blake. We don't have any more community rooms for the kids. And just the community that I'm involved with, where I live, we're fighting against each other just to hold election and who's going to have power over what and who's going to do what. So we're not getting along across the board for anything to work for the African-American household. And I see it every day, and I hate to say it. I feel ashamed of our people. We came a long way, but we are broken down as a people. We are.
Wow. You know, that's an interesting point. And, you know, I can appreciate your honesty over this airwave, even when it comes to opening up about your 20-year-old daughter. Let me ask you this question. You say that Xavier's mom is, if I heard you correctly, you say, you know, she's part of the blame. Is that what I heard you say?
Yes, she is part of the blame. Because I look at these young mothers today.
Right. And if that's the case, if she's part of the blame, if Xavier's mom, Zelma is her name, were listening to the program and she had to respond to you, wouldn't she equally say that you're 20-year-old, that you and your husband are part to blame, just as you're putting it on her for Xavier? Would she not say that?
Oh, I know I'm part to blame, though. I'm going to admit that I'm part of the blame, yes.
Wow. So you think that a lot of the parents are enabling their children by spoiling them as opposed to exercising. In a case like this here, would it be possible to cut your daughter off, or that's easier said than done, or just simply exercise tough love? And we're going to give Ms. Flick a chance to respond as having been a licensed social worker and being in the mental health field. We're going to give her an opportunity to respond. But go ahead, please, Angela.
Oh, yeah, I think I'm part to blame from holding her hand for so long. And I have cut her off. I do things like I don't you know what? I'm still kind of enabling her because I still pay her cell phone bill. But then when she pisses me off enough where I'm like, you know what, enough is enough, I won't pay it for 2-3 months. I've tried to make her go out there to look for a job, but I know it's tough with her trying to continue her education and get her high school diploma. It's hard for her to work at the same time with her going to school. But I look at her and I'm like, when did this happen? At what point did we break down as a family, we enabled her to do what she needed to do? Now, I will say that I probably, instead of letting them earn things, I've given them things. So I'll look around and say, okay, we need such and such, and I'll just buy it. You know, instead of them working or doing a little chore to earn what they need. Now, I used to do it when they was younger, but then when I started working longer hours, and I don't know why I was doing that. I guess I'll buy love.
Okay. All right, we're going to ask you to stand by, Angela, just for a second. You're listening live to Dr. Just for Skills. Ms. Blake, go ahead, and if you would, give us your thoughts.
Well, Dr. Walker, I'm no expert. I have been blessed to raise two what I deem as successful young sons. But I'm listening to our caller, and I will say that keep talking to her, keep emphasizing things. I'm not sure what her interest is. I come from a developmental approach. Like, people have to, we say it all the time on the show, change comes from within. You can't bang change into somebody. And, you know, at 20 years old, they're grown, whether we like to admit it or not. And so the key is getting them to understand why it's important in their own life to change. And for my children, it was the recognition of a goal that they wanted to accomplish, you know. And once they grabbed a hold of that goal, they were unstoppable. But I would, you know, preach and talk and everything. And, you know, it was something that had to click in them. But everything you're saying is being heard, whether she acts like she doesn't hear it or not. But really find what's her interest, what's her passion, what is it that she wants to be. And I think when you get her to hone in on that, that you may see a change. And it may not happen as quickly as you like, but eventually it's been my blessing experience that they do click. And you sit back and you're like, oh, my God, they finally got it.
You know, Miss, and I laugh because when you say it finally clicked, and I've seen so many experiences as well, Miss Lake, from one extreme to the other, Angela, with where kids, it seems they become dysfunctional adults in some cases, because it seems for some reason something has happened. Like you and your husband are asking a question, where did we go wrong? And it doesn't necessarily mean that you went wrong. It's just that there's no guarantees in life about anything. We talked about that, Chancellor, maybe before you came on the air, that, you know, you can, you know, the DNA, the characteristics, traits, and even those who are coming from a dual family, we mentioned that earlier on the air, that they can do everything right, and their kids still don't turn out right. So, I mean, there's just no guarantees, and I'm seeing more and more and more young people now, young adults, who are now turning out that they're just giving up on life. They have no fears. They have no ambitions. They just almost seem, Ms. Blake, they just seem like they don't even care to live or die. So how do you reach out and find?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
In South Carolina, I think I shared, our Institute of Teen programs, and those programs are still going on. And listen to those kids. I think as adults, we spend a whole lot of time lecturing and talking at kids. And there's nothing wrong with that because we have wisdom. But listen to them. Hone in on what's really going on. Are there insecurities? Did something happen that we don't even know about that triggered these behaviors? Well, I guess, again, that's the psych social service part of me that really tries to get beneath what's going on, because there's usually something that lies beneath it. You know, so that's the key. I believe, and of course, a lot of prayer.
Yeah. Okay. You're listening to Live to the Dr. Just Walk Show. We're going to take some of the comments that have come into the studio in reference to tonight's topic. Are people really the products of their environment? Let's take a comment. A young lady sends in a comment. She says, are people really the products of their environment? Thank you for doing this topic. She says, I think people are products of their environment, and that is why we have so many dysfunctional adults. Rose, we're going to ask you to respond to that one. Do you think that there's any merit to what she's saying, that because people are products of their environment, that we have so many dysfunctional adults?
I really don't believe that people have to be products of their environment. I think some people are, but I think you can get away from it, you know, once you become of age and realize that this is wrong and this is right. I don't agree that they have to be products of their environment. Of course, their environment learned behavior, and I understand the DNA issues. You know, that I know they probably cannot get away from easily, but just their environment, that's what they learn from what they're seeing around them. They can get away from that, but they have to want to badly enough.
Rose, I gotta stay with you on this one here. This lady says, I think people are a product of their environment. That's why we have so many dysfunctional adults. Now, you're saying they have to want to get away from their environment. If they're seeing dysfunction in your environment, they don't know that to be dysfunction. They know that to be the norm for that environment. So how, mm-hmm. I mean, it's so easy for maybe some people who may not be subject to the environment or have an experience in the environment, and I'm not suggesting that you don't, Rose, but then how can you say over the air they have to want to get outside of an environment that they're not, that's not the norm for them?
And that's why I say, you know, at some point they know what's wrong and what's right. You know, they grew up around the drugs or around the guns in their environment. Does that mean that they don't know that this is wrong when they become of age? No, they do know, and at some point they make a choice to continue to do that because they learned that as they were growing up. okay? But they can get out of it if they really want to. I truly believe that. Move away if you have to when you become of age, you know, if you feel like you're stuck in that community. I'm sorry, but I might be wrong, but I'm just thinking that, and maybe because I have never experienced that, maybe that might be the reason why I'm thinking this way. But I believe that when you become of age, you're an adult now, if you don't want that life, I believe you can move away from it.
Okay, that may be the case when you're an adult. But, like, going back to Xavier, he's only 14. And this boy's got all kind of issues. And this boy, we're going to give you a chance to respond to that. And we're about 8 minutes away from closing the show tonight. But how can Xavier move when he doesn't have a job? He's really young, and he can't work without, perhaps in some states, even a work permit. But then you say, Rose, you know, move outside. You know, as an adult, you're saying to move out. But the thing is, but these children, if they live in that environment, Ms. Blake, and here's what I'm saying. They're living in those environments. And for Xavier, I can almost assure you, that's survival for him. That's survival for him. He's got to stand his turf. It's almost like gang warfare. Ms. Blake, give me your thoughts on that.
Again, I look at his mom, not like to shake a finger at her, but she has got to be a strong enough woman to go fight for her child. Fight that she will not lose her child to violence and to those types of behavior. And she's got to be there saying, look, somebody is going to help my child.
You know what, Ms. Blake, and that becomes just like she's fighting for Xavier, just like you said, and every parent needs to fight for their child, somebody also needs to fight. You know, those who, even educators, that are aware of the resources out there, they need to be serving as advocates for these children that they see that the system is failing. Because you have so
Absolutely.
Many kids, those counselors at that school cannot keep up with those 1,200 kids. They cannot keep up with them because the human mind will not allow that to happen, because they might, the only way that you can remember even one child's name is that you've had to have that repeated to you on a you get to know that. You establish a rapport. Now, what's the likelihood of one counselor being able to know 400 kids' names? That's not likely. That's not likely. So one kid saw you a month ago. Human nature has it where, okay, you were going to look into something, but you get distracted. So now you don't even know where you get the paperwork with this girl that you just saw a half hour ago. And all of a sudden now it's like, who was that came into my office? I can't remember this child's name. Oh, well, you know, because you left it in somebody else's office, and it went on the floor. The custodian put it in the garbage, and now that child gets lost in transition. And then so many kids, 400 kids. And you're not saying that that one counselor has to see all those 400 kids, but he or she is assigned to one-third of that population because there's only three counselors servicing 1,200 kids. And so you're like, you know what, I can't remember. You go home and you have a nightmare because you can't remember what this kid, but you know they had some kind of problem. And then now, 2 weeks later, the parent is calling and saying, my child said that they came to see you. Well, I'm sorry, miss, what is your child's name? You see, it's lost. The parents got to keep fighting. You got to keep fighting until now they know who Xavier is. They know he's doing bad things, so they know they got to kick him out of school because everybody's tired of Xavier. You know, Angela, let me go back to you just for a second here. Now, you know, this lady, she sent in her comment. She says people are the products of their environment, and that's why we have so many dysfunctional families. Do you agree with that? And we got to move on. We got 4 minutes.
Yes, I totally agree with that. I see it every day in my neighborhood.
You see it every day in their neighborhood. All
right. Every day.
Let's take another comment. Ms. Blake, we're going to ask you to respond to this one here quickly, please. This female says, I think parents and others use this as an excuse to blame someone for their failures in life. Even if you grew up in a horrible environment, that does not mean you have to stay that way as an adult. Rose, that's along the lines of what you were saying. Let's give you that one. What do you think? Is she on point?
I totally agree with that. I understand that some kids are going to fall through the cracks. They're going to follow their parents. They're going to do the drugs, and they're going to do what they learn as they grow up, you know. But I don't think you have to. And I'm sure you have children who grew up in that kind of environment but choose made a choice not to follow in that path.
Okay, thank you for that, Rose. We really appreciate that. Ms. Brink, did you want to comment on that one before we go to the next one?
Let's go to the next.
All right. This male, he writes in, he says, my wife and I both grew up in bad environment, and we did not allow that to stop us from becoming successful law-abiding citizens. I think you can grow up in a bad environment and ultimately change your attitude about the environment and eventually move on. What do you think? It didn't stop them, he says.
Yeah, it's intrinsic. It depends on that person. They can overcome a bad environment, without a doubt.
All right. Angela, we'll give you this one. We'll ask you and Rose to share this one. This male writes in, he says, some people think that you can take yourself out of the environment, but you can't take the environment out of you. I know that is a myth, and it is definitely not true, because I am a living witness that you can take yourself out of the environment and take the environment out of you. Please don't allow people to stereotype you into their category. Angela, how important is that to you, that this guy says that?
It's very important to me, because I live in the projects, but yet I want to say I'm a product of the projects. I grew up in the projects when I was younger, but do I act like project people? No. My daughter has fallen off track, but with my other two daughters, I've learned the process of how to fight the Board of Education, how to go in and go request some pills, which that was something I didn't know with my 20-year-old. And now I have my 20-year-old come to me and be like, Ma, how come you didn't do all this stuff when I was growing up that you're doing with Tyler and Alicia, which is my 13-year-old and my 8-year-old? Why? Because I'm learning. I'm learning how to go down to the UFT teachers union when they're having these meetings every month. I'm learning how to do things the right way. When back when my daughter was 20, was 4, or going through whatever she was going through, I was a young mother learning, trying to figure out where to get the help from and who to talk to and find out what the process was to make sure that she didn't fall off track. But now I'm on track with my other two, and I know where to go to get the resources to get the help now.
And that's what we were saying earlier about the resources. And see, you took the initiative to do it. Rose, give us your thoughts on this here, taking the environment out of you, and you can do it, he also said, and you can move on from the environment.
Well, Angela just proved my point. You know, she said she grew up in the projects, and she still lives there, but she doesn't act like that, you know. So that just proved my point that although you might grow up in an environment, you don't have to do the things that you see going on around you. You can choose to do the right thing.
All right, interesting point. Ms. Blake, we're going to give you the final word with the final comment that we're going to be able to take in for the evening. And this caller writes in, this female writes in, and she says, Dr. Walker, I think if you want to, you can change your attitude and your mindset, regardless of where you grew up. Ms. Blake, bring us home with that one.
That is absolutely true. I often say that change comes from within. And I often say you can't change the people, how do I put it? You can't change what goes on around you, but you can change the people that you are around. And so you can make up your mind as an individual that nothing will stop you. Have goals. Don't be deterred by it. Don't let anybody discourage you. And make up in your mind that you will not let obstacles stand as a method to or barrier to your success. So once you get that in your spirit and that determination, you are simply unstoppable. And that's what I encourage people to do. Not make excuses, but make it happen.
I like that. You know, on that note, we are clearly out of time. And I just want to say that are people really products of their environment? We have spoken a mouthful this evening. And if you missed this show, go back in and you can catch the archives 20 minutes after the cast concludes. I also want to say that part two, my producers are letting me know that part two will air 3 weeks from tonight. It will be actually a week after the New Year's has set in. You don't want to miss this show for the second half. All right, we're going to be bringing you a special program on next week prior to Christmas, and we're certainly looking forward to that. Thank you all so very much for joining us. Those of you all that we weren't able to get to tonight, we do apologize. Keep listening. Tell your friends about us. Blow us up on social media. I want to thank all of my callers tonight for joining us, and I just want to say to you all, join us this Friday for your half-hour inspirational program. Of course, if you choose to bypass this Friday, join us next Tuesday live for the Dr. Jesse Walker Show. Until this Friday or until next Tuesday, I say to my listening audience around the world, good night, God bless, and thank you, God.